G'day trendsetters, welcome to episode 757 of the Trendsmove podcast. My name is Tim Egg, and if you have a question for the show, jump on through to the website, trendsmove.com, or send me through an email, tim@trendsmove.com. Now, for a little while now, I've subscribed to a podcast called The Drive, and it's... I must admit, most episodes I don't listen to. But if there's a new episode that pops up that I'm interested in the person or the topic or whatever the hell, I listen to it. And I probably should find time to actually listen to every episode that comes out because it's a bloody informative podcast. And they can go real deep dive. And some of the episodes he's done has been probably some of the best episodes in a podcast I've ever listened to. Like the two episodes he did a couple of years ago with Dr. Sam Milan. I've listened to those episodes, I don't know, 3-4 times. They're pretty spectacular. And he recently did an episode which was okay with Alexander Boo, the Gustav Edens and Christian Blumenfeld's coach. That was pretty good. But his latest episode 296 on foot health. 296 foot health. Preventing, treating common injuries, and enhancing strength and mobility. I've just finished the episode. It goes for 2 hours and something. And that's the downside to his podcasts, because they go deep dive into a particular topic. It can take forever, but I'm actually going to go back and re-listen to this episode because it was really, really good. So, and it's something that I wish I had that resource going back in 2020, when I first did my Achilles, running up the stairs. Because since then I spent, you know, God knows how many. I probably spent who knows how many thousands of dollars on physiotherapy, and treating the Achilles, and then, you know, in and around that, just purely by chance, finding a physiotherapist that's traveling around Australia that was here in Launceston for about 6 weeks only. I booked in to see her because I needed a change. Things weren't working, and she found the root cause was, you know, I call it the arch of my foot, which was the main reason I've been getting these alarms, but getting all these injuries, I should say. But it was all the muscles in and around the foot. And she was able to diagnose it and start giving me all these strength works and mobility works and stuff. And slowly but surely, it's improved. I'm running at the moment, and have been for a little while, unrestricted. And which is funny because... I got on Strava has this thing, and I don't click on Strava a hell of a lot. I like to actually go through the feed. But I saw on Strava the other day where it says, like, you know, this time last year, you know, similar to what Facebook does, you know, 3 years ago you did this. But last year it said 21 times 1 minute run, 1 minute walk. So it's... that's where I was this time last year, and that was a huge progress for me at the time. It was like bloody high-fiving. I just did 21 minutes of 1 minute easy run on a grass oval and 1 minute walk. It was bloody high fives all around. And now at the moment, I'd say touch wood if I believed in that sort of crap, but I'm running unrestricted, and I'm officially running the best I've ever run, which is, you know, I just wish someone was around so I can give them a bloody high five. High five me. So, but what this episode does, it goes right into all this, and I'm thinking, this is exactly what I've been working on in the last year, what I've been, I've been learning a lot about in the last year. This is a really, really, really good episode. So I recommend... any endurance, in theory, I would recommend absolutely every single person with feet to listen to this episode. But at minimum, if you're an endurance athlete, which I'm assuming you kind of are tuning into here, I really, really, really hope you actually tune in to listen to this episode. Listen to the episode. So it's The Drive with Dr. Peter Attia, and it's really, really good. So if you haven't got two hours, 20 minutes to listen to it in one hit, yeah, and because there's a lot of information that they pluck at you, I would recommend you get 10 minutes a day, listen to it. It's like it's really, really good, informative podcast, and I really recommend it. Anyway, today's questions comes from Astrid, who I coach, who is sending a couple of good questions for me lately, which, if you want to be super cool as well, send in your training, racing, nutrition questions through to tim@trainsmooth.com. Now, that's just right. So there's a little bit here. How do you test your athletes in different triathlon disciplines and calculate intensity zones? How do you calculate predict zones for athletes before testing? And can you say something about why you use moderate, medium, mad instead of giving training intensity zones? So, Astrid's got a test week coming up pretty damn soon, and so I sent her an email with some information, and she basically wrote back. I sent the question for the podcast because I like how you talk us through the concepts of what you're talking about, and it's very informative manner. Also, working as a mental preparation for me. So, this is a good question, and it depends greatly on the athlete, on their resources, what they have. So, an athlete, does the athlete have a power meter? Does the athlete have a lactate tester? Does the athlete have access to a lab? What test I would do for one athlete is going to look really, really different than the next athlete. Also, what's the athlete like mentally when it comes to testing? I've coached one now who I can't test whatsoever because they just don't do the test session. So I'll book it in week after week after week after week, and that session will never get done. I think they just create too much stress in their heads over it all instead of trying to get a baseline. I've had a couple of other athletes that is very much like it. And then I have had athletes in the past that wants to do a bloody FTP test every single week. It's like, why? They're miserable. So what I'll do is I'll start off with the gold standards of testing, and I'll work my way down from there. So the absolute gold standards of testing that I, completely the gold standard, is getting the athlete into a lab and for a full metabolic test. So we're talking lactate, it's just the works for both cycling and running. So they're taking lactate, they've got the ventral, the breath coming out, so we know LT1, VT1, and you kind of transcribe it from there. You get an athlete in the lab two to three times a year. You're honing in on that athlete's intensity pretty damn good. And you're able to, what's the word I'm looking for? You're able to make that training program really, really nicely targeted and dialed right in. And that athlete's probably going to see the bigger gains coming from a pure training program point of view. Next step down from that is an athlete with his own lactate tester. Again, just two, three times a year doing some tests, And then if he has his own lactate tester, he's then able to go out into the real world and double check some numbers. So for instance, if you get an athlete doing a ramp test for lactate, doing a lactate ramp test on the bike, you know, where you find out where his LT1 is, LT2 is, then let's say this same athlete's going to be doing an Ironman. And so you're going to be racing somewhere around that 95% of LT1, thereabouts. So you're going to say to that athlete, go out, ride 5 hours and include 4 times 30 minutes at race power, what we think race power is. At the end of each 30 minutes, I want you to take a lactate test, and we're just going to see where that, you know, the accumulation, the lactate accumulation, to see where that is, to see if we're translating what we see in the initial lactate test and versus what are we seeing on the road, and see if we're dialing in those numbers even more, and that tells us a big picture there. So that I really like as well. Lactate tests, meters, there's, you know, cheap ones, there's expensive ones. The strips are probably more expensive than anything. Depends on the quantity you buy. It could be anywhere between $3 a strip through to $7 a strip. If you're doing it 2-3 times a year, plus a couple of on-road tests as you're getting closer to your key race, it's not really that expensive versus, you know, like we buy like, you know, Nike, Alphafly, Nike running shoes, race shoes, in any brand, $380, $360, because they're going to save us, you know, 10 seconds per kilometer faster, for instance. That's very nice, but if you go, you can narrow in on your training intensity pretty close to what optimal is. The gains could be far greater than what $380 pair of shoes are going to give you. They really are. Then you add $380 pair of shoes on. It's like I was only laughing at. I listened to this other podcast. I'll go off sideways here for a second. I was listening to this podcast, Sweat Elite, which I've been listening to them for a while. And I've seen, and I subscribe to their website, pay a quarterly fee of $12 or whatever it is. But I've seen over the years, and I've done this for, I don't know, 6 years or 5-6 years or whatever. But I've seen their business model change a half a dozen times. Anyway, it's changing again, and they're talking about a shareholders, become a shareholder, which you're not really a shareholder. They just want your money, and they're going to give this for the cost, which they're not really giving a hell of a lot, but they're not asking for a hell of a lot either. So you've got that, and then you start hearing the poor man's marketing. The poor man's marketing advice, well, it's only a cup of coffee a day, sort of, you know, it's or a cup of coffee a week or whatever it is. It's that poor man's marketing, you know, tips. But I kind of forgot where I was rolling with all this. So a lactate tester. I really like. It sounds expensive, but in the whole scheme of things, if you're aiming really high in your age group, I kind of think it might be a pretty critical tool these days. I've just seen too many I've seen too many strong progress in training by a number of athletes now that makes me think, you know, the value here is just really strong. Anyway, and then excuse me, and then under that you've got other tests. So for instance, if we're trying to come up with a run test, for instance, it will be something like a 10-kilometer race. You can generally get decent threshold numbers and zones coming off a 10-kilometer race. Half decent. Yeah, it's long enough where, you know, you've got to pace it right, but it's short enough where you're not going to just about destroy yourself. Can do 5Ks. I do 5Ks with some athletes. It just depends where they're at the time, where their headspace is, what's around. Is there a 10K run race around? Is there a 5K run race? Some athletes, there was one athlete who I'll never do another 5K run race with again, because he goes out too hard, and because he's looking at numbers, he just wants to destroy himself, and he puts too much into that 5K, and now, you know, he gets injured. So he needs different type of testing. Also, for the bike, your general FTP test, I'm not a big fan of the ramp FTP test. However, I do use it every now and again, depending on the athlete. If the athlete's very new to cycling or new to endurance sports or whatever, I'll generally start them off with that, and try and build up from there. I would generally go the 20-minute FTP test, even though it's a severely flawed system. I'll use it, and I can make adjustments from it. And because I think what's 20 minutes, you're going to get a lot from the athlete. So, for instance, it'd be like a 15-20 minute easy spin followed by 5 minutes hard effort, 5 minutes easy, 20-minute all out effort, and then you got your cool down there on after. Yeah, a lot of athletes hate it because they suck. You get 10 minutes in, you think, how the hell is these last 10 minutes are going to happen? And then the last 5 minutes are supposed to be, you know, question why you're even born. But what I found with those, yeah, and generally with that, you get your 20-minute test. You know, it's 95% of that is in theory supposed to be your FTP. Hard part about that is when we're looking at lactate, for just about every single athlete that's done an FTP test that I've personally worked with, and then you look at their lactate, it's really, really off. It could be anywhere between 10 watts through to 40 watt difference. It's like a scary difference. And so I kind of think it's probably closer to 90% of that 20-minute all-out effort, depending on the athlete. However, for myself, I've been the absolute exception for that. My 20-minute all-out with 95% of that is 305 watts for me. My LT2, VT2, well, VT2 was much higher. I think that was 320, but LT2 is 305 watts. So that was pretty spot on. But I've been, and fair enough, I haven't got this massive pool of athletes that I've tested who have lactate testers. We're talking about a dozen different athletes in total that either have their own testers or I've done the testing for them. But every single one, other one of them, their lactate, what we see their LT2 is, or FTP, are really, really different. So I kind of think it's probably closer to 90%. But anyway, I am veering off. So you've got that. For swimming, CSS, critical swim speed, which is generally a 400-meter time trial, followed by 5 minutes easy. There are about 5 minutes of rest with maybe 100 or 200 easy in between all that, followed by a 200-meter time trial. I don't use that at all. I think it's an extremely flawed system as well for giving athletes paces. But I do give athletes that, so I have a bench, like I have a marker, and then I can see over time, think, geez, you know, 3 months ago when you did this test, we've improved your 400 meters by 4 seconds and your 200 meters by 6 seconds. We've got numbers we can go off. But I also like 1,000 meter time trials in the water. But then some athletes, it's hard to do. Not only does it do the head in that they've got to do that long of a test, so some panic over that. But in particular, a lot of athletes swim of an afternoon after work. All of a sudden, they're sharing a lane with 300 other people, and you're working in and around them. So just tell them, go do a 1,000-meter time trial at 5:30 in the afternoon at your local swimming pool with 8 other people sharing a lane. 3 of them's doing best breaststroke, the other one's doing, some kick on the kickboard, and then you've got a couple of fast ones that are faster than you, and so you've got to give way to them, and then you've got old granny over here that's not giving way to anyone. So it became a nightmare using that for a lot of athletes. So it really does depend on the athlete. Also, then you've got math tests. I like math. It's nice for a lot of athletes, especially if they have no access to lactate test. You can just do a run off, just do a run or a bike ride. It's generally so in very short, it's 180 minus your age will give you that math number that's a starting point. You can give add or take away 5 beats depending on a couple of different things. And then for the run, it's that I generally take 5 or 10 beats off for the bike because you're using less muscle for that compared to the run. And it trying to translate pretty damn close, not perfect, but pretty damn close. So I do like that as well. As for athletes that have started with me, and I depending on where they're at in their development, is depends if we throw a test week in straight away or let them run a couple of months or whatever, build some fitness up before we chuck a test week at them. It obviously depends on a few different things, but for so let's say I get a new athlete, I'm just starting them off building some fitness, building some trust, getting to know each other. And for the first month, when you're working with an athlete, is all about getting to know each other. What I mean by this, that, what do they mean by that, trying to understand each other. Then we throw in a test week somewhere there, based around their resources. I forget where I was going, I'm just gibbering here, but so yeah, that's what I was saying. So what I do with those new athletes until we get a test week in, I'll generally run off the theory, unless they've got past data information there. I can say, what does Zwift have your FTP at right now, for instance? And then what's your high? I can ask a different couple of questions of recent training. If I got access to their training log, I can have a fiddle around, have a little look-see, and see what I think the numbers are. But then I can always revert back to math. All right, so their math on the bike's going to be 140. Their math on the run's going to be probably 145 beats a minute. And then we can kind of get things rolling from there, get to know each other, and we progress. And we slowly dial the training in tighter and tighter over time. But going again, if the athlete's got access to a lab, that's mighty magnificent. You find out their fat max and everything, and then if not, they got the a lactate tester, that's really, really handy as well. But yeah, as for moderate, medium, mad, I've just been a bloody big fan of easy, moderate, medium, mad. So this is I took this from Brett Sutton. This is his concept. Easy is obviously easy. You can tell though some people they're easy. You tell them to go 30-minute easy, they're easy is actually they're moderate. But Easy is obviously, you know, explains itself easy. Moderate is your all-day effort. So you should be, if we're talking zones, it's going to be zone one, zone two, for instance. You should be able to nasal breathe the whole time. You should be able to hold a conversation the whole time. If I tell you to go out for a six-hour bike ride, you're probably going to be constantly chopping and changing between easy and moderate throughout the whole thing. But it's going to be mostly moderate. You're going to be burning fat as your primary fuel for most of it. You're going to be stimulating type 1 muscle fibers. That's moderate. Medium, on the other hand, that's hard, but difficult, but manageable. So, and that's going to be, you know, you could be from 1 minute interval through to 40 minutes, an hour, whatever. It's just, it's going to be, so your intensity to say, oh, it's, this is going to be zone three, or it's going to be zone four, or it's going to be, you know, it's going to be really different depending on a couple of things, fatigue, you know, all that sort of stuff, but depending on the duration of that interval. So for instance, if it's going to be, let's say, you know, you're doing a 3 hour bike ride with 2 40-minute efforts into it, you're still going to be, you're going to be burning a combination of fat and glycogen. It's going to be mostly type 1 muscle fibers, mostly. Type 2X is going to be hanging in and about thereabouts, depending on the terrain. But you're still pushing it. It's probably you know, you're pushing it the whole way. You back it off to 3 minutes medium effort. You're probably going to be, if we're talking FTP, somewhere around there, you're probably going to be around that 100%, 95% of FTP, or your glycogen dependent interval. As for MAD, that will depend greatly on the duration. So a 30 seconds MAD is, I would assume, is going to be VO2 or anaerobic, versus 3 minute MAD is probably going to be in your VO2 section, versus 10 minute MADs is probably going to be sitting 100 to 105% of FTP. If we're talking percentage, it's just going to be all out, really. So for people that are listening, if you're still listening, if you look at, like, I'll write a program out. I'll have, for most athletes I coach, we'll use Final Surge. So if you're using Final Surge, you click on Workout Builder, I think it's called, but that will give you the percentage of, or give you the interval power numbers or heart rate number. So for instance, if I've got 6 times 3 minutes at 115% of FTP, for instance, with 3 minutes easy in between, that will give you, go right, so that's going to be 300 watts, you know, for 3 minutes, and I'm going to back it down to 145 watts for 3 minutes, back up, it will give you all the numbers there. Versus, and then in the description, it's going to have 6 times 3 minutes MAD, 3 minutes easy. So I do that because some athletes don't, their number, just so they have an idea. So if they're riding, for instance, and I've got this, we'll use that same session, 3 minutes MAD, and they can't get to that number, but they're working bloody hard, I don't want them to cripple themselves, and they're still feeling good, but they're just struggling to hit that number that day. It happens to us all. And so let's say they back it off to 95% or 100, well, 105%. Let's say they back it off to 105%, and that still feels mad. Then I'm happy with that, because the perceived effort's pushing that particular effort. But having said all that, it's surprising how close, when you're dealing with power, when you're dealing with heart rate, when you're dealing with perceived efforts, how in line they actually become over time. So I could be riding with an athlete, and I say, without looking at your numbers, let's say they're, to give some, you know, bit more information, let's say they've got an interval, medium effort, 10 minutes. I said, without looking at your power numbers, heart rate, what's your power now and what's your heart rate? Do you think it is? And generally or not, pretty bloody close, that could be within 5-10 watts prediction of where they're at and within 5 beats of where they're at. It's just calibrated over time of experience with those intervals. And so when you see an athlete who's doing their intervals outside, which I'm surprised how many athletes don't do intervals outside. They'll have an interval session, they'll 100% do it indoors, outdoors, they just want to ride. And they lose that feel for power, I always feel, if you're not doing your intervals outside as well. And you lose the ability to bike handling skills and just in particular power control. But so if the athlete's outside and go, right, 10 minutes medium effort, he doesn't need to be staring at his Garmin the whole time. You can look down every now and again. Right, I'm at 300 watts. Yep, still feel about 300 watts. Looks down a bit, but more or less he's running on feel, even though he's just using the athlete is just using their Garmin screen just to guide whether they're still on track or not. So I'm a huge fan of easy, moderate, medium, mad, as well as it also proves, and it's a pretty bloody close, but it also proves you don't need a power meter, you don't need heart rate. These are all very, very nice things to have, and I do recommend having them, but you don't need them to do well. And it also depends on the athlete's goals too. I think if the athlete wants to qualify for Kona, and I think they're essential tools. But anyway, I think that might be about it. We'll see how we go. If you guys have any other training, racing, nutrition questions, send them on through to tim@trainsmooth.com. Until next episode, hooroo.